Welcome in, everyone, to She's Electric podcast, episode number 2. I do have to say a quick apologies for the nasally voice right now. I'm battling some sickness overseas in Taiwan, but that didn't stop us from running an incredible episode. We had the GOAT, Lane Beachley, on, and we talked everything about her life from the very start of her journey to the end. Tune in. It's going to be an absolutely amazing one. Okay, let's try this again, Lane. Again, I'm so sorry for all of our little technical difficulties, but we're rolling on through. Like I mentioned before, I absolutely love you and everything about you. And you are just, for me growing up and having all the opportunities I got to have as a female surfer, it was literally because of women like you. So I and my generation owe you a big thank you. So first of all, it's a big thank you from us.
Thanks, Jess. Thank you very much.
Lane, yeah, anytime, you deserve it. but let's roll through a couple questions I like to do at the start of each episode that are kind of just a little bit more friendly, just things where you and I can get to know each other on a bit of a deeper level before we get into Lane Beachley, your career, and all these curious questions I have. So I did this with Molly as well, so I'm excited to know your answers. First of all, if you were told that you could only listen to 3 songs on repeat for the rest of your life, what would they be?
Piano Man by Billie Joel.
Ooh, nice.
Afterglow by INXS.
Nice.
And Lose Yourself by Eminem.
Really? I love that song too. Oh my gosh. Bangers, all-round bangers for Lane Beachley's repeat for the rest of her life. Next question I have for you is death row meal. An entree, main dessert, what are you eating?
Death row meal. Well, I know what the main would be, and that would be turkey bolognese that my husband makes over brown rice, yum, gluten-free spaghetti with some parmesan
cheese.
Oh, so good. and a glass of Pinot Noir. Dessert would have to be a chocolate brownie with coconut dairy-free ice cream.
Yeah.
And entree. What would I have for entree? Maybe a salt and pepper tofu. Like with an Asian slaw.
Yum. I'm coming. This sounds great. That sounds delicious.
Yeah,
I'll be
that
there.
That sounds all good. All right, cool.
Another little question I have for you. This one I can definitely give an example if you want. I'm not sure if you listened to the episode with Molly, but a little guilty pleasure, something that you know you shouldn't do, but you do anyways. Mine is that every time before I catch a plane, it could honestly be 6 in the morning, I have a cookies and cream Hershey's bar. I just, every time before I get to plane, I just love them. And they make my plane ride so much better.
guilty pleasures. I don't really have many of them, if any of them. I certainly don't have a routine like yours where I have to have a cookies and cream Hershey bar before I jump on a plane. On weekends when I have a nap, I tend to wake up sometimes craving sugar, and that inspires me to often jump on the bus or my bike or walk down to the local gelato shop and grab a gelato.
Love that. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Okay,
don't do
two
it often.
More questions. No. Well, see, I'm starting to catch more planes than probably what my intake of cookies and cream Hershey's can keep up with, so I need to be careful with that.
Enjoy while
you're another question. Yes, this is true. People are telling me this. What gets you out of bed in the morning? What is it for you that, you know, you're just like, all right, here we go, day started?
Helping and inspiring people to live a better life.
Oh, the best. Just the best. Great answer. Top notch. I love it.
And surfing.
And lastly, yes, of course. Well, surfing, of course. Lastly, who is Lane Beachley to you?
Who is Lane Beachley to me other than my mirror reflection?
Yeah. Like if you were to describe Lane Beachley to someone, how would you describe her?
Oh, my goodness.
Cheeky. It's a hard
witty,
one.
Witty. Sometimes intense. Competitive. Intrinsically driven. Disciplined. And brave.
Beautifully described. Beautifully.
Thank you.
I absolutely love it.
How would you describe me?
Just icon, all-around icon, legend, pioneer, absolute class act, classy, sassy, fun, young-hearted. I love it. I feel like when I hang out with you, I feel like I'm just hanging out with one of the girls. It's awesome.
So that's good. That's really good.
Yes. So, Lane, before we get into it, something you need to know about me is I am a very visual person. I am a visual learner. I've always been it. So I will definitely ask you to paint me a lot of pictures through this episode, but I think the audience probably want to get that same sentiment, that same kind of picture painted for them. So I'm going to start off with that, and then we'll roll into this first question I have for you. I need to go back to the start. So basically in this podcast, I like to take people on a journey. I like to feel like I've held your hand from start to finish. And I would love to know just how your life started. Let's start with school. What school did you go to? What was your friendship circle like? You know, how was something that we all go through? How was school for you?
Primary school was Balgowa Heights Primary, which was a co-ed primary school, all state schools, no private school education for me. And I remember I was really into school and I loved the friendships, the interactions, the connections that I created at primary school. It was the pre-school lunchtime, recess and after-school activities that really excited me. So I would get to school really early to play handball in the morning in primary school. And then I joined the gym, the gymnastics team, and I was quite an avid gymnast. I also played a lot of tennis as a kid. And then after school, I would play soccer and footy. So
So you kind of covered all sports.
As a kid, yes. I loved doing all of it. Skateboarding, riding bikes, surfing, bushwhacking, tree climbing. I was very active, very perhaps a hyperactive kid. And then when it came to high school, I went to McKellar Girls High, which was an all-girls state high school. Yeah, didn't have the same reputation as it does today.
Oh.
It was...
Oh, no way.
Yeah, it was a bit of a... it was full of rat bags, I think. It was a bunch of girls who used to flush each other's heads down the toilets and smoke in the toilets and just a bunch of rebels. But I didn't participate in any of that. Never had a smoke in my life. I never have any interest in that.
oh, my goodness. That is not the McKellar Girls campus I know these days.
Yeah, it's very mature these days, very professional and a wonderful school. But, when I went there, it was, a very different environment. And, look, the teachers were very loving and supportive at times. They let me, at least the PE teachers, let me skateboard around the campus, and I was allowed to wear sunglasses at school assembly. But they were quite discouraging when it came to my professional surfing career, so much so that because I was failing halfway through year 11, my school report card literally said, "Lock up Lane's surfboard. It's a distraction from her studies. It'll amount to nothing."
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Didn't you prove them wrong?
I got that wrong.
Yes. How you like them apples, hey?
Ha. Indeed.
So primary school sounded really fun for you. High school, however, not so much. You mentioned that you played a lot of different sports. Obviously, surfing has been an absolute driving factor in your life, but were there any sports that maybe kickstarted that competitive fire? You mentioned you played tennis. Was there a relationship with a sport before it that potentially kind of, I don't know, just ignited a fire for you?
All sport, all games. I mean, I grew up with an older brother, so I always wanted to be playing what he was playing and doing what he was doing. He surfed. I surf a lot better. But he gave me an avenue to explore that competitive drive. And I think I channeled a lot of my anger or fears or whatever it was that I was processing as a kid, because I endured a lot of trauma in the first 8 years of my life. I channeled that into sport, and I channeled that into competition and challenging myself. So tennis was the first sport I fell in love with, and I was aspiring to become a championship tennis player. And then I found competition surfing. And even though I came dead last in the first event I ever competed in surfing, I was still in love with the sport and I'm much happier in the ocean than being landlocked on a tennis court. So I chose surfing over tennis, and I think that was a really good idea, and it was a good decision, because I'd never be a seven-times world champion tennis player, that's for certain. I'm good, but not that good.
Well, I don't know. I feel like you're a very driven person, Lane, so I feel like at some point you probably would have been able to put your head down and be like, no, you what? I'm going to be tennis world champion, everyone. So I feel like, though, I was the same. I played a lot of different sports, and it got to it where I was like, no, surfing has my heart. It's such a beautiful sport that we're lucky to be a part of.
Every great female surfer started somewhere. It's getting exposure. That's the hard part.
Hyundai She's Electric is back
for season 3.
And this is your chance to make Team Electric this year.
Team Electric will get access to expert coaching and national exposure.
The top surfer with a 12-month Hyundai ambassadorship.
A 12-month Hyundai vehicle loan.
Not to mention a VIP experience with me at the Hyundai ABB Grand Final 2025. Enter now via the She's Electric website. Will you be discovered next?
You said on a video that I watched that you started surfing when you were 3 or 4 years old, which means you've now been surfing for over 4 decades. That is absolutely incredible. This is where I'm going to take you back to that visual aspect for me. Let's talk about this very first day, or maybe a few moments where you realized that it was surfing or nothing.
I wish I could remember that moment, Jess. I don't remember the moment where I decided it was surfing or bust, because I was still committed to doing other things. And perhaps it was the nature of women's surfing also that it never was really presented to me as an all or nothing opportunity. There always had to be some sort of, not fallback plan, but an idea of what else, because surfing can't be everything. Perhaps, though, if I reflect on the early years of professional surfing, because I started competing when I was 14 and I was still in high school and I came dead last, and that was like a charity event up on the Northern Beaches. And then when I was 15, I won the regional scholastic titles and the state scholastic titles. And then when I was 16, I went on to the national scholastic titles and passionately disliked the whole team environment and how vicious competitors can be. I went, I want nothing to do with that. I'm not even entertaining the idea of an amateur career. I'm just going to get my HSC and I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to commit myself to joining the Pro World Tour. So perhaps it was after high school. That's when it was surfing or bust. That was when it was surfing or nothing. Because I did go to school and attempt to learn other things.
Yeah, and I feel like you had also a lot of other points that maybe might have helped with that surfing or bust, because you grew up on the Northern Beaches and everyone knows there's so many breaks around there that has this ego male kind of surf environment around it. And you were one of the first women in that area to push through and break through that stigma. Take me back to, I don't know, maybe a couple of days where you felt like you probably pushed through the frustration in the surf of being kind of treated like a nobody out there, or treated as if you weren't good enough to belong there, because not only did you have those breakthrough moments at those early events, but I assume you would have had a lot of breakthrough moments in just free surfing in general as well.
Yeah, the free surfing experience growing up at Manly Beach, which I often say is the most appropriately named beach in the world, has really presented me with the skill set and developed my skill set to withstand challenges and hostility and criticism, because I was one of the very few women surfing at Manly. Fortunately, there were several before me, but majority of the time when I was in the water, I was a distinct minority. And that meant copping a lot of hostility and a lot of challenges and criticism from my male counterparts. And I refer to Manly Beach as like a high school graduation, because I started in the southern corner on my foamy when I was 4 years of age, and I stayed on my foamy until I was 13. I was very happy on
really?
My foamy. Yeah. I know, I was a slow bloomer. And it wasn't until I went to high school. Yeah, I went to high school and there was a girl in year nine, so a year above me, who was a surfer and competitor, and she sold me her secondhand fiberglass board. So I didn't really move onto a fiberglass board until well into 13, almost 14 years of age. And then I was it was a slow start, a slow burn, progressing from a foamy to fiberglass. And then after that, that's when I had to leave the southern corner, the safety of the southern corner, and move up to the like mid-stain. And once I found my tribe up there, I had like 15 guys that I used to surf with, and they became my mates. And I found like my tribe and this group of support and banter and just a lot of fun. And we always had each other's back. We gave each other a lot of crap, but we had each other's back. And then I progressed onto custom-made surfboards when I was 15. Around 15 or 16. And then I was able to start, improving my surfing, which is then I moved up to North Stain, which is where best surfers are, the best waves are, and the most amount of shit. This is where I cop, guys stopping me from catching waves, dropping in on me, pushing me off my board, splashing water in my face, telling me to go in because I was a girl. But fortunately, there was a few world champions out there too who were very supportive, and that taught me the importance of finding my allies and surrounding myself with people who elevated me and nurtured my development.
I had no idea that you spent so much time on a foamy. Just thought it was a straight trajectory.
No, not like it is today.
Oh, my gosh, that is mind-blowing to me, because you have 7 world titles to your name. I just wouldn't have thought that, but I mean, yeah, you had so many obstacles just in that early start of your career. But like you said, it was a graduation through the phases just of the beach, which I love now because that beach has so many rivalries just along that one stretch of beach. So I absolutely love it. Yeah, it just sounds like that kind of built you up and got you prepared for when you decided to leave school and go, okay, here we go. We're going to take on the tour. We're not going to mess around with this scholastic anymore. I'm doing this for myself, and I'm going to prove myself to my English teachers. Be like, do not lock myself up. Lane, you are an absolute icon, and you're the reason why a lot of us get waves in the surf these days. And I thought I had it hard at North Narrabeen growing up, but it does not sound like it.
Well, you did.
1990. I did.
It was tough. And look, when I go up to Northie today, I still get dropped in on. The boys still burn me.
Really?
100%.
I'll have a word with them, Lane. Don't you worry.
Please. Please do.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrificed to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt the support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.
Let's fast forward to 1990. The Pert 2-in-1 Shampoo Women's Pro was the first event. And at Manly or Narrabeen, it was on the Northern Beaches.
Manly.
You are very open about your relationship with that event. Here's another paint the picture for Jesse moment right now. Tell me, make me feel better about my nerves, my preheat nerves. Were you freaking out that day when it was your first big time competition event?
My surfboard felt like it was a block of cement.
I could not do a turn. I felt like such a kook. I was so nervous. Coming up against all the icons of the sport, there was Pam Burridge and Frieda Zamba and Wendy Botha and Pauline Mensah and Kim Merrig. I mean, I was surrounded by the best of the best, and I thought, I don't belong here. And I just elevated them all, which meant obviously suppressing my own confidence and lowering myself. And I had a shocking time. Came dead last in that event. Then the next event I went to, I think I jumped on the Greyhound bus and went to Burleigh for the event up in Burleigh, and I came dead last in that one. And then I don't know, you'll have to tell me what events I competed in 1990, but I know the first five of them I came dead last.
I was shocked, first of all, when I saw Pert 2-in-1 Shampoo was the sponsor of the event. I was like, what a random sponsor.
Well,
that is so strange.
Haven't you seen, you've obviously seen Girls Can't Surf, and according to the guys,
yes,
you know, the documentary, and according to the guys, the only way that we were going to earn our right in the world of surfing was to get our own sponsors that weren't taking away from their sponsorship opportunities. So Pert 2-in-1 was perfect at the time.
it was absolutely perfect at the time. I actually... have looked into that first event. I have more of a side note question for you right now, because I am just purely confused. It said that your heat total was 52.50. That makes no sense to me. Yeah. I was like, maybe do you get scored on more than two or three waves? I was so confused.
Those days it was four to the beach.
Four.
Four waves to the beach.
Way. Priority? No priority?
No priority.
No way. Oh, my gosh. I was so confused by that number. I was like, I have never seen a heat total that big that's not an ABB event.
Yeah, exactly. So was that my heat total score?
That was your heat total score.
Jeez, I wonder what they were judging each wave out of at that time then. They must have been judging it out of 20, because there's no way I would have scored 100 points.
Yeah, yours was 52.50, and I remember seeing it going, what? That makes no sense.
Makes no sense to me either. Or maybe they just moved the decimal point the wrong way.
No, let's not be hard.
It's possible.
Like you mentioned before, you went on and you did lose five events in a row, and when you were inducted into the Hall of Fame, a company did an article on you, and it said, Beachley turned professional at a young age, and while she initially took some time to find her feet, she was ranked sixth in the world at 20. I've got to know, what does finding your feet look like for Lane Beachley?
Finding my feet, what does it look like? The first thing that comes to mind is finding my confidence and being able to back myself. I taught myself how to surf, which means I taught myself a bunch of fundamental flaws. And my technique was fundamentally flawed because I couldn't jump to my feet in one motion. And that prevented me from being able to compete with confidence, especially in sucky waves, hollow waves, and waves of consequence. Despite growing up in waves at Manly Beach that are notoriously known to be pretty substandard, I became an avid big wave surfer because surfing big waves suited my style of surfing. I'm a powerful surfer, a backfoot surfer, and had very little fear in big waves, so they suited me. So perhaps I just started finding my feet in a variety of different conditions. And also, when I was number two in the world in 1995, I started working with a guy called Steve Foreman, my surf coach, who I actually 3 days ago or 5 days ago went up and did some coaching with him because there's always room for improvement. And he basically watched me surf and he said to me, I'm happy to work with you, but everything you know, everything you've done to this point, you need to let go of and start again. He essentially told me to wipe the slate clean.
Wow.
Because everything was
and
flawed.
Then did you rebuild from the ground up? Like what?
Yes.
Was it a full couple of years until you kind of really found your confidence?
The challenge that I had, Jess, was I was
so many challenges. Number one, I was a classic victim, and I refer to myself as a victim because I blamed all of my misfortune on everybody outside of me. Everything outside of me was to blame. And it took me a couple of years to realize that the common denominator to all of my suffering and disappointment is me. So the change had to start with me. Secondly, I have very little support, didn't have any or very little monetary support, which made it quite challenging to obviously travel the world and commit to doing the tour. My technique was fundamentally flawed, so I had to let go of everything I knew. And at the same time, when I'm trying to rebuild, I'm training 5 days a week. I'm working part-time in 4 different jobs. I'm earning $8,000 a year from my sponsor, and I'm traveling the world tour full-time. And at that same time, I'm suffering from my second bout of chronic fatigue syndrome, which is extremely debilitating physically, mentally, and emotionally. So I found myself not only flogging myself to prove to the world that I'm worthy of support and worthy of a world title, but at the same time suffering from suicidality and depression because of the chronic fatigue syndrome. So it was a real struggle, obviously.
I have so much, I obviously have a lot of respect for you, but just hearing that, these are things I didn't know. So my respect goes up because from what it sounds like, you had every reason to give up. You had every reason not to be a winner, to not try again. Was it just that urge to prove people wrong that you found yourself kind of slowly starting to build your career and going on the trajectory, or was it more of a prove it to yourself, be like, I'm not going to get knocked down and I'm going to keep getting back up again?
I feel that my desire to succeed, look, if I reflect back to that period when I'm 23 years of age or 24 years of age and I'm suffering and I'm in a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, a lot of hardship, as you said, it was very easy for me to go too hard, hard basket. And look, there was many a time when I did say, I'm done, I'm over this. I set the goal to win a world title in the first 5 years on tour. And when I finished my 5th year, I was second in the world and I was deeply distressed and disappointed in myself. And it was my personal trainer that basically said, look, are you putting into it exactly what you're expecting out of it? He was my accountability partner, my honesty barometer. So he said, you know, what is it you want? And are you doing the work to be deserving of that result? And quite honestly, I knew the answer was no, I'm not doing the right work. I was doing a lot of the right things for the wrong reasons, or I was doing a lot of the wrong things for the wrong reasons. But either way, I wasn't in the right headspace and I wasn't in the right heart space to be deserving of a win. So I fell in love with a guy called Ken Bradshaw in Hawaii. And he taught me a lot about my equipment and about my approach and about my training. And then I fell in love with process. Then I won my first world title. And then I went on that domination of world title campaigns. And now I reflect on my career, and I've just written my book, Awake Academy, and I reflect on my career. And now I know, Jess, to answer your question, what drove me to keep going was self-worth. I had identified success as being worthy of love, and the only way that I was going to be able to create that and achieve that within myself was to become the most successful surfer in history. So my self-worth was wrapped up in everything outside of me, never from within. And that cost me a lot.
Did you find support from like your peers as well? Were there any other surfers kind of going through that same, maybe not, you sound like you were on a very personal journey, but that same kind of, I feel like I'm giving it my all, but we're not getting anything out of it. Did you find love from your friends on tour as well?
At times, yes, I definitely did. That tended to ebb and flow with my level of success that I was creating. So when I was down, they were certainly more compassionate and supportive of me losing than they were of me winning, because I was so dominant for such a long period of time. But look, to say that, I still have a couple of friends from the tour. I lost a lot of friends from that generation. We came through at a time where in the early years, like the 90s, where that we had a severe scarcity mentality. So we didn't support each other. We dragged each other down. Then in the early 2000s, we had that explosion of the surfing industry, which invested a lot of money in support into women surfing. And so we found our groove within the sport.
Mm.
We felt like we finally belonged, even though there still was that mentality of it turns to shit, send the girls out. And then we started to understand the importance of bonding together and standing up against that together, because united we stand. And when we started to communicate and share our challenges and share in our successes, that created a much stronger or a much more cohesive collection of girls who were willing to push against the status quo and to give women surfing the platform that it so rightly deserved, and put those wheels in motion and of course benefit and continue to expand on the platform that our predecessors had made for us. So every generation has a responsibility to leave the sport in a better place than where they found it, and that means paying it forward.
I love that. I know you probably didn't love it at the time, but I loved the fact that you went through all of that and still didn't give up. I'm sure so many people will listen to this. I know I am really inspired by this, that you went through so much. You did not give up. Let's go back to the competitive side. You won your first world title in 1998. And
yeah, what year were you born, Jess?
I have 2002.
Okay, just getting some perspective. Carry on.
So I have a theory on athletes. I have two theories on athletes. One of them is I think competitive sport in itself is a roller coaster, and I think the best athletes are the ones who handle and navigate the roller coaster the best. And my other theory is that people work for trophies, but athletes also work for a sigh of relief. You put in your heart, your soul, blood, sweat, and tears to get that trophy to then feel like, oh, I did it. You know, to get that, I can just release and let go right now. 1998, talk to me about that sigh of relief moment you would have had when you won your first world title.
Well, it's very mature theories, and I can definitely relate to both of them, because when I won my first world title, it was immense relief. It was immense satisfaction, but I wasn't enough yet. I'd been declaring to the world for 16 years that I was going to be a world champion. I'd been declaring to the Pro Tour world that I was going to be a world champion for the last 8 years. So you know who also took a sigh of relief? My peers. They were so sick of hearing about it. They were like, thank God she's won it. Finally, she'll maybe shut up about it.
I love this. I love this. And then they were probably like, okay, she can stop winning now. When he went on a tangent.
After the third one, I have five more. Like, hello, do you reckon you can share the love? No. Nah.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrifice to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt the support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.
I absolutely love it, Lane, and I feel like you were the first person to go back-to-back that amount of times, men or women. We're not going men or the first lady to do it. No, you were the first person to ever do that. Was there ever a time that you almost didn't get over winning, but you kind of just like, piece of cake, I'm not threatened at all? Like, was there any moment where you were just like, I'm cruising right now?
I never felt like I was cruising because I thrived under pressure. So to answer that, honestly, if there was a moment where I felt that complacency, then I would add extra elements of pressure just to bring the best out in myself. But it reminds me of a day that I was out surfing at Jeffreys Bay. It was a free surfing afternoon, and I was sitting in the water with Samantha Cornish, and we saw Joel Parkinson take off on a wave. And he did like the first turn threw a massive rooster tail. The second turn he busted his spins out. Then he did a floater and then another closeout maneuver. And I looked at Sam and went, I can do that. And then paddled into the next wave and did exactly that. And I paddled back out and she's like, yeah, you just did that. So there were moments where I had such clarity and confidence and conviction in myself. And I wish I could bottle that and stick with that, because I don't know why I would then sabotage and question and doubt. And I know now that a lot of those doubts and fears are literally either stories or triggers, which are a result of being depleted of energy. And I just didn't know all of those things at the time. So, gosh, if I knew then what I know now, things would be very, very different.
Hindsight, it's a funny thing, isn't it?
2020 hindsight, so valuable.
I've got to know as well, this is, again, another personal question, what does it actually feel like to win a world title? Because I have dreamed of it when I first started surfing. Tell me what it feels like.
Oh, pure elation, immense satisfaction, just everything that you've invested your whole life into to then become fruition. It's almost quite surreal. I remember when Steph won her first world title, because she basically took over from me, and I was sitting right next to her when she won her first world title, and she was actually in the stands, in the scaffolding at Honolulu Bay when her nearest rival lost. So she was announced as the winner. And we all had the Steph T-shirts on and she had the flag. And I remember hugging her and getting nothing back from her, because she was so immersed in the moment. She was so elated and so excited. And so I relived my first world title through that, because I don't think I truly comprehended the significance of it, because I came out of the water at Lackanau having been crowned as a world champion, not even knowing that I'd won the world title, because I had thought I had to surf another heat to win it. And then they started announcing champion du monde de surf and I was like, where? Oh, shit. Oh, me? Little old me? And I remember Ken came down and gave me a big hug, and Derek Hine came down and said, well, celebrate, do something, like get excited. And I didn't know what to do. I remember just like kangaroo hopping, like I was the OG Ray Gun. Like I was kangaroo hopping on the beach and doing cartwheels, and I was, had a ball, but I really didn't know how to celebrate it. And look, celebration is what anchors success, and it's what motivates you to keep investing into the work to achieve greater success. So I know I felt satisfaction, but then I just felt like there was so much more to do. Whereas if I reflect on Steph's celebration, she was so consumed by it all that she didn't even know I was hugging her, because she was just that elated. I wish I could go back and have that kind of celebration, but it's just not me.
It's such a crazy feeling to go through, because you know how much you put into it. All of us don't know, I'm sure it consumes you, right? Like it is everything to you. And then you went on to win 7 world titles. That was such a huge trajectory. You are one of the greatest in our sports and will forever be one of the greatest. Thanks. Got to know, from going on a career like that, how do you know when to stop? How did you know when to say, okay, I'm going to hang it up? Because I feel like for someone like me, that feeling would be so addictive that I would never want to leave.
Well, as you said, I did win 7 of them, so I had plenty of opportunity. I've got a trophy room full of trophies, so it's not like I have had this moment where I was like, I just haven't quite made it yet. Like I haven't quite done enough yet. So, look, quite honestly, the decision to retire was really easy, because if I was honest with myself, I literally asked myself this one question. am I willing to do the work out of the water to generate the results I expected myself with in the water? And the answer was no. I was done.
Yeah.
And I honestly wanted to retire earlier than I did. So after I won my seventh one, I wanted to retire the following year. But what kept me there and what made me, what inspired me to surf out another year was when I won my first world title in 1998, Lisa Anderson got injured and had to retire mid-season. And a lot of the US-based media suggested that I won my world title because of her absence. And that was heartbreaking and really challenging to accept that. Like, I just, it was insulting to me. But
yeah,
I didn't want Steph to have to endure that. So that's what inspired me to stay in another year. And quite honestly, Steph didn't need me to compete, but she also said to me several times, like, I know if I get past you, I get past everybody. So I was Steph's benchmark. And I'm proud to have been that person in Steph's life, because the sign of a great teacher is when their student surpasses them. And Steph is the GOAT, unequivocally. The GOAT.
I am about to start crying right now. That was so beautiful. And I mean, you mentioned before you have this incredibly decorated career, you have a huge trophy room, but surely it's moments like that and seeing where female surfing is now for you that maybe even surpasses that trophy room. It's almost like an internal win.
Yeah, there's been so many moments where I've had those little internal wins, Jess. So when the WSL bought the ASP and then started erecting these enormous structures at contest sites, I went to Snapper Rocks, I think it was a couple of years in, and they built this monolith of a structure on the beach there. And I walked in to, and at the time, the current CEO at the time walked me in and showed me around and gave me a tour of the contest area. And I walked into the change rooms that had lockers and rash vests with their names on them with coat hangers. And I started crying because I thought, wow, I used to have to change in the car park at Snapper in front of all the public. I had very little privacy, nowhere to collect my thoughts. I'd have to lock myself away in my car, anything to be able to just channel my attention and get my, you know, get in my zone. And now these athletes are afforded the opportunity to change in public, I mean, change in private, have a rash vest with their name on it, choose their own number, have a locker room to be able to prepare themselves, allow them to store their equipment out of the sun in a place of safety. Like, all these little things make a really significant difference and impact to your preparation. So, yeah, that was overwhelming for me to see that.
You got to even take a look at that heat at Pipe at the start, well, that event for women surfing at Pipe at the start of the year. Was that, that had to have been another moment for you, even with someone like Molly in it, who actually attended one of your camps when she was about 15 or 16. You've watched her from so young. You chose her as your rising talent. And then she goes and performs that at Pipe at the start of this year. That's got to be another moment for you where you just have to go, look at how far we've come.
Yes. You know what really blew me away this year with when it comes to Molly was that turn she did at Sunset. That blew my mind. And it blew my mind because I was the queen of Sunset back in my day. I know how hard it is to commit to that section. Video doesn't do it any justice whatsoever. I mean, you need a GoPro cam on Molly's head to see exactly where she was positioned, how big that section was, how big that wave was, and how technically challenging it would have been to land that maneuver. That blew my mind. And I've been part of Molly's development, and I'm very proud of her. I'm very proud of where women's surfing is today, and I'm very grateful that it's in such safe hands.
Surfing for me is all about having fun and finding ways to keep it fresh and exciting. These boards do exactly that. So if you want the chance to win one of these boards and be a part of a women's surfing revolution, this is for you. we're going to be giving away the Hyundai Bright Spark Award each week to the most enthusiastic and committed female surfer we find. No matter how long or short your rides are, submit your Bright Spark video and show us how you enjoy the process, celebrate the wins, and most of all, have fun. Now more than ever, surfing is for the girls.
It's funny you say that about Sunset, because you and Molly are the only two women in history to win back-to-back at that event. So you guys are, yeah, you guys have a pretty cool relationship with that wave. That's something we touched on, and she was honored that she even had something with your name next to it. That she's like, oh my gosh, really? So aww. Yeah, I feel like jeez. You and Molly, you've seen how talented she is from a young age, and it's something cool that She's Electric does. It gives everyone a pathway from grassroots surfing. And obviously, like we're talking right now, surfing's come a long way, and especially for female surfing. But is there anything you see today that you would change about female surfing? Is there any way you'd like to see it go in maybe a different avenue?
I've always wanted women's surfing to stand on its own two feet. And that means taking it away from the comparison to men, and allowing it to blossom into a sport that respects its history, but has a really bold vision for its future. And I feel that women's surfing right now is being not held back, because it's been 100% supported by the WSL, but I just think women's surfing, women have so much more to offer a sport. I don't think that's been truly embraced or encouraged. The grace, the beauty, the flow. You know, women dance on waves. You know, we tend to be one with the ocean, one with nature. It's called Mother Nature for a reason. I love to see us, and I love the competitiveness and the drive and the strength and the beauty that comes with that. No, I just love to see women surfing extend beyond the competitive realm in a way that embraces and enhances and perhaps, I don't know, just nurtures and celebrates the beauty and connection that we naturally have with nature.
I don't know. I actually couldn't agree with you more. No, I think that sums it up beautifully. I think so. I agree. I think I think women surfing and men surfing are really different, and women surfing shouldn't be compared to men surfing, because they're two really different realms. So
it's like comparing men and women in floor gymnastics.
It's different.
Yeah, it's just different.
Well, in saying that, Lane,
but. Sorry, Jess, I don't know what it looks like, and I don't know what that means, but I just know that there's so much more out there for women and women surfing, and I don't know who's going to drive that vision or explore that, but I just want to make sure that women don't feel like they have to subscribe to the WSL way of doing things.
Yeah, no, and for you, who's just such an icon in our sport, I couldn't agree more. I think there's almost not a regiment that they've been, because they've been compared to the boys for so long that I think women have felt like they need to, like, well, we can do what they do, but you actually don't have to do what they do. There's such a beautiful other way. And I think it's interesting to see where it'll go. I cannot wait. I love where it is. I love how far it's come. I love the people who helped to get it there. But I'm excited to see where it goes. I think it's a really interesting time in our sport. But in saying that, Lane, I would love to know, for the little girls coming through, and even like myself, I still think I'm a little girl in some ways. What are you saying to those girls who are going to be the ones who are pushing the next generation? What are you saying to this, whoever, someone tuning in from anywhere in the world who want to be those Lane Beachleys?
Comparison leads to a sense of inadequacy, so never compare yourself to somebody else. You belong there. If you've done the work and you've created the results and you're there, back yourself and ensure that you believe that you belong there. And then the last thing is surround yourself with really good people, because you're going to encounter, you're going to encounter threats and challenges. You're going to encounter people who perhaps are bullshit artists as well. People who would tell you that, oh, I can help you and I've got every, I can make you, you know, who you need to be. And be really clear about who you are. So have that clarity of vision. Surround yourself with really good people, and then take actions daily that are consistent with who you want to be.
You have no idea how much I needed to hear that this week too. Oh. So that could not have come more timely, especially with the comparison thing. So thank you. That has actually helped me a lot. So I'm sure that's going to help a lot of others. And Lane, like I said at the start, you inspire me so much. And I feel like so many people worldwide are so grateful to have you do what you've done for the sport and then still continue to do. The fact that you're still going to the Gold Coast, still training, still trying to be a better surfer, a better person, that is so inspiring. I've got to know though, Lane, last question I have for you. Who inspired you?
Oh, I draw from I draw inspiration from more than just people. I'd say my main source of inspiration, I've never been able to answer this question succinctly. You know, I used to say my dad inspires me, but you know what? My dad has dementia. He's, you know, 85 years of age, and I took him for a walk for an hour today and just spent some quality time with him. I'm in awe of his tenacity and his resilience and, you know, his love of life. So my dad has always been a great source of inspiration. But the thing that really inspires me today is I'm inspired to improve and challenge and grow, because then I can share those lessons with others. So I'm inspired by people who are willing to do the work themselves. And if they can learn, if they can take one thing from an interaction with me, or if they can take, if I can shortcut the struggle one way, or if I can encourage you to believe in yourself and not compare yourself to others, that inspires me to keep doing what I do. Because at the end of the day, every single one of us want to know that our life matters. And if I can do something on a day-to-day basis that helps people believe that they matter, then that inspires me to get up and do it again tomorrow.
Mm. Well, you've ticked that box today, Lane, because you've made me feel better. I cannot tell you how grateful I am to have you coming on the show, and I've learnt some stories about you. I've learned a lot more about your journey, and I think this was a really cool journey for us to go on as well. And I'm really grateful. And ladies and gentlemen, Lane Beachley, the icon of our sport. Thank you so much, Lane.
Jess, you are doing a remarkable job. You are beautiful, talented, mature, and inspiring as well. And so you're paving the way for the next generation of young women as well. You know, we all hear the saying, you can't be it if you can't see it. Thank you for being the shining light, the positive role model, and the spokesperson for that next generation. You're doing an awesome job, and I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, Lane. Oh, I'm going to cry. That's so nice. Incredible episode from Lane Beachley. When you thought you couldn't be inspired by her enough already, then you have that chat with her. I walk away feeling like I could cry. She's so inspiring. She does so much for our sport. And I think we should all be super grateful that we even get a Lane Beachley in our sport. Guys, if she's inspired you like she's inspired me, get your entries in to She's Electric. We've had an amazing season so far, but the competition is still live. Enter today for your chance to win and be a part of this awesome initiative that is She's Electric. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and I look forward to episode 3.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Have you ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrifice to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.